Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. Coming up on 11 months of the Out of the Trenches podcast. If you like this podcast, please rate, review, and share on iTunes, Stitcher, and any of the sites where you download the podcast. It'll bring more listeners in. And also please share and promote on social media. Thank you.
My next guest is Joe Pizzo, the AMLE National Middle Level Educator of the Year for 2020. Joe teaches integrated language arts and serves as a drama co-director at the Black River Middle School in Chester, New Jersey. A veteran middle school teacher of 47 years and an adjunct professor formerly with Union County College and the College of St. Elizabeth, Joe has been with the Centenary University since 1992. He has also been previously named the new NJCTE and NJAMLE Educator of the Year. He is a published poet and author who has presented professional development workshops across the country. His podcast, Joe Pizzo, A Spot of Poetry, can be found on YouTube and is soon to be available on another outlet. A former president of NJCTE, a board member of NJCTE, NJAMLE, and NJ Schools to Watch, the NCTE historian, a member of the NJ Autism Think Tank, an instructor and tutor at the Edison UWIN Learning Center. Joe is a Boy Scout Merit Badge counselor and a lector and usher at St. Mary's of Czechoslovakia.
Częstochowa
Parish. Welcome to the podcast, Joe.
Thank you so much for having me, Dana. I appreciate you giving me this time.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
I really have had a wide range of experiences throughout my career. I think one of the biggest surprises was actually being honored as the AMLE Educator of the Year. Getting ready to head into my 47th year, I received a phone call that said, I have some news for you. And I said, okay. And I was told, you're the Educator of the Year this year for the nation. And I said, oh my gosh, hard to get me to be speechless, but I think you've just accomplished that. And I really love what I do. So I think being in the trenches is where I want to be.
Yeah.
And when I come out of the trenches, I come with my students. We go outside the classroom. We don't do things that are just textbook oriented. I'm not a big believer in worksheets, never have been. I think they're fine for skill practice, but that's a very limited application.
Mm-hmm.
When one sends a child to school, a parent, a guardian hopes that the teacher is going to see the good in that child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I try to do. I try to find, where's that little button to push? Where's that switch that I can flip? I write a lot of emails home if a child's not doing well. And I tell moms and dads, your child needs to do this or that, or is missing this or that.
Mm-hmm.
How can I be of help? A lot of notes go straight to the child with, I'll add a CC to a parent or a guardian, mm-hmm. and maybe to a guidance counselor, and mm-hmm. to the principal. And most of my notes say, please check your progress on the online source and tell me, how can I help you? What seems to be holding you back from being more successful? I have a student who was not speaking a whole lot at the beginning of the year, and I finally was able to get something, and it was so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I let him know that. And now every discussion, this kid's got his hand up and he has a lot of insight.
Mm-hmm.
He sometimes sounds like an encyclopedia when he comes to this information that he gives. And it's so nice to hear. It truly is. That's the reason I'm in the classroom. I tell the kids that I'm not here because I have to be. I'm here because I want to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really see that passion in you and how, you know, you talk about working with students. And you had a couple of stories for me during our pre-chat. You talked about a poetry assignment that you'd given to students and how that ended up being presented when a memorial garden after 9/11 was dedicated. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, when 9/11 happened, we lost a beloved parent in the community. He's a Port Authority patrolman, and he was in rescuing and saving lives. And one time went in, didn't make it out, and had nothing recovered. We talked about heroes in class. And then I said to the kids, well, who are our heroes? Just to have heroes and have it as a term, but not do anything with it makes no sense. So who do we have as our heroes? And we listed some, and we came up with Mr. Greg John Froner, the gentleman who was lost at 9/11. And I said to the kids, maybe this would be a good time to do something in his honor. What do you think? And they said, well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So we met a committee of seven students, my principal when he could make it, my vice principal when he could make it, a guidance counselor when she could make it, and the widow. We all met on a Thursday at lunch. Kids would go get their lunch. I would either inhale a quick lunch or just eat my lunch later. And we would talk about what can we do. And I had one student who sort of took the lead in all this and helped to design a garden. We said, we'd like to have a memorial garden because gardens represent life and they represent growth. And so we want Mr. Froner's memory to live on. We don't want it ever to go away. She went out and found a landscaper, and she got the landscaper to donate his time, his material, and his men's time to come to a local park, and we constructed a garden in Mr. Froner's memory. While we were doing all the planning, the kids wanted to schedule this for Father's Day. And we said, well, Father's Day may not be a good time because it's going to be difficult for the family. We also have a problem with people having other commitments on Father's Day. So, and it's a Sunday, that's a day of worship. Why don't we try for Saturday? They said, oh, okay, Saturday's fine. We helped to build the garden over a two-week period. And while we were meeting that next to the last week, I said to the kids, we need a poem. In this whole program, we have about a two-hour program here. We need to have a poem, something that pays tribute, that dedicates. And they said, yeah, okay. I said, who'd like to write a poem? And the room is silent. And I'm looking at them and saying, come on, we need a poem. He said, well, can you do one? Yeah, but this is a kid program. Yeah. I want to do you guys, you know, this is your tribute. I'm going to emcee the thing. I'll just keep it moving. But this is really yours. No one wanted to do one. I remembered a year before, I had a youngster who was a tremendous, tremendous poet. But he was an artist, and artists aren't always the smoothest students in the world. And this was John. He would slump in his chair. He would sometimes fall out of his chair. His leg would look like it was up around his neck somewhere. But his poetry was incredible. Oh, could that young man write? He was in eighth grade now, and their lunches are different, and I couldn't have him come to the meeting. So I thought, I see him in the hallways. Let me see if I can grab him. So a Thursday or a Friday before that final week of preparation for the program, I see John walking down the hall. And I never referred to him as John. I called him Poetry Man.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Poetry Man. He says, what? I said, can I ask you a question? Okay. Would you do something for me? I don't know. All right, let me ask you then specifically, we're having this program for Mr. Froner, and you know that we lost him in 9/11. We'd like to pay tribute. we want to have a poem, and I don't know any better poet in this building than you. Mm-hmm. Would you consider writing a poem for us? I don't know. Well, would you just think about it? Okay. He says, all right, I'll think about it. Good. Thank you. And I send him off. Well, the weekend goes by, and now we're in that last week prior to the program. And I see Monday goes by, Tuesday morning goes by. He's not coming over. It's Tuesday afternoon. And I said, you know what? I got to find out one way or another what's going on, or I need a plan B in a hurry.
Yeah.
And I see John walking by, and I said, poetry man. And he takes his hands and puts them up to his head and goes, oh, runs down the hallway. He opens up his locker. And as a typical artist would have a locker this way, everything comes flying out.
Yeah.
He goes through the papers. He finds his notebook, brings his notebook, runs back down the hallway, comes up to me, opens up the notebook. Things are flying now out of the notebook. He's on the ground going through. He finds a paper. He looks at it. He goes, here, and hands me a paper.
Uh-huh.
And it's a poem that he wrote for Mr. Frohner. And I'm almost in tears as I'm reading this. And I said, this is wonderful. This is terrific, John. Thank you. Would you come to our meeting before we head out? I'll get you permission. Mm-hmm. Come to our meeting, our last meeting of preparation. Okay. Well, he comes to the meeting and we're going through everything, all our plans. And I said, would you want to read this that day?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. All right, I'll tell you what. I don't want to put any pressure on you. So here's what we'll do. Either you go ahead and read the poem on your own. When you're getting up there and I introduce you, if you find that you can't do it, I'll stay up there until I know you're comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't do it, just hand me the poem. And if you start and can't make it, again, hand me the poem. I'll take over it. Not a problem. All right. Well, the day comes and we have over 200 people show up on a rainy Saturday morning. There's a police presence to direct traffic in and out of Chubb Park.
Mm-hmm.
And John shows up and he's sitting there with all the dignitaries and everything. They stop the girls' softball game because some of their committee is part of what we're doing. And they're not going to be playing softball during a dedication.
Yeah.
So the girls come up and they're all sitting behind with the dignitaries and people are giving speeches and whatever. And it gets to be the time when John's ready to present. Now, this was not a light day by any means. It started out with the Port Authority bagpipers marching in.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a dry eye in the place.
Yeah.
And everyone's saying what a wonderful opportunity this is for kids to make a difference and how our country has pulled together and we're learning so much. It's time for John to come up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, okay, stay ready. You don't know where this is going to go. So the speaker who was up there at the podium leaves. I start to stand up and I walk over to the podium. John's not moving. And I said, excuse me, our next speaker is a young man who has written a wonderful poem.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in tribute to Mr. Frohner. And as I turn around and ask him, are you ready? He buzzes right by me.
Yeah.
Goes up to the podium, puts his poem on the podium. And I thought, okay, I guess he's ready. So I went and sat down. He gave this poem and there was not a dry eye in the entire place. There were over 200 people in tears. I'm fighting back tears. He finishes, takes his paper, returns to a seat and sits down.
Mm-hmm.
I look over and Mrs. Frohner, the Frohner family, the Murphy family, they're all crying. And I'm thinking, okay, I can't just continue the program on. I have to do something. I have to say something.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you say at this point? So I gathered my papers together and I said, pardon me for just a moment, if you would. I just need a moment to gather myself, and then we'll continue the program. And I waited a few seconds and saw that people were starting to calm back down. And I said, thank you very much for your patience. I appreciate that, and continue the program. Mm-hmm. When we finished, there was nothing but praise for John's poem. There was a reception afterwards, and I went to the reception, stayed right to the end because I wanted to show that I really do care. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Frohner stopped me on the way out, and she said, Joe, I want to thank you. I said, well, I just basically steered the bus. Yeah. It was the kids who did everything. You know, they did the organizing. They got the landscaper. We went to the town meeting and they got the variances and you name it. I was just the guy who was kind of facilitating. Mm-hmm. She said, yeah, but you don't understand what this means to us. I said, well, I'm sure it's very important. She said, no, I've got to tell you, we don't have one piece of anything from my husband. Nothing was recovered. We don't have a piece of his uniform. We don't have a badge. We don't have a belt buckle. We have nothing. A shoelace, nothing. She said, by building this garden, Hugh and the kids have given us a place to mourn. Mm-hmm. We have a place now we can go. We can sit on the benches. We can see the flags. We can walk up and thank you. And I'm fighting tears back this whole time. And I'm remembering back to the morning when we arrived to start the program and the landscaper's truck is there. Well, we're there about an hour and a half, 2 hours before the program starts. He's there like 7 a.m. and we're thinking, what's he doing there now? Everything looks beautiful. He's got flags all the way up the hand-laid sidewalk and the garden is perfect and the benches are all perfect. And our vice principal said, I'll go over and check. So he goes over and he comes back and he says to us, you're not going to believe this. I said, what do you mean? He said, now the landscaper's going home. Why is he leaving now? We haven't started the program yet. He said, no, you don't understand. He was here all night. I said, excuse me? He said, yeah, he was here all night. He knew all the work that you guys put in to make this happen. He didn't want anything going wrong. He didn't want anyone coming in and vandalizing or thinking as a joke that they would do something and ruin the day for the whole town. So he slept in his truck at night. Now he's going home, he's going to go to bed. I said, oh my gosh, how amazing is that? And that impact, I know I still carry it with me, and I can tell you that all the students do as well. And the one student who was the kind of spearheading everything for us, she now lives out in Colorado, kind of close to your heart, I know. And we had a tree dedicated. They have the freedom trees that they made. They grew from the cuttings of the trees that survived. And Mrs. Frohner was able to get one of these freedom trees, and it was planted last year and dedicated. The young lady, Yana, flew back from Colorado to be there on the day that this was dedicated. That's a lesson that I learned about the power of students and the power of taking an activity and moving it outside the classroom. I was overwhelmed.
Yeah, and that really just goes to show, like, those that many years later, that student, you know, it had such an impact on her, and how you're able to retell this story and how it had such an impact on the community, this project that the students put together, right? I mean, that's so inspiring to hear. And I wanted to point out something you wrote in an AMLE article. You were said that student engagement is promoted through meaningful experience, particularly those that honor each student's culture and understanding of the world. So how have you found success during the pandemic in engaging your students in the remote or hybrid environment?
Honestly, the only thing I think that's different is the delivery. Mm-hmm. My vision is the same. I tell the kids, if there's one thing I miss when we're in class and you do something that's outstanding, I can't walk over and give you a little fist pump. I can't do that. So what I have to do is we maybe do an air fist pump, or give you a thumbs up, or you know, something. I don't feel the same as I do when I'm there with you. I said, it's so different to be in a room with someone. We've been hybrid for most of this school year. And the time before, about a week before the December break, and now up to Martin Luther King. We have been hybrid, returning to hybrid. We're planning on Tuesday, the day after Martin Luther King Day. We've been remote for those couple of weeks. But I think as long as you address the kids' needs and you see that everybody has an opinion, everybody has a purpose. I just wrote an email to a mom and I thanked her for the way she's raised her young man to be an out-of-the-box thinker and how he contributes so much. It was hard for me at first to pull his interest level out. But once I was able to do that, this kid is as bright as anybody. And he's smiling, he's beaming now. He's coming to class ready to go, hand up. Yeah, I'm set. And I think the whole thing is that he's found that there's a secure place to be. And that's the thing. My mentor, Dr. Joe Burns, always said to me, the me I see is the me I'll be. And it's so true. And he said, you cannot have competence unless you first have competence. Confidence. You have to lead with the confidence. Once you have the confidence, you have competence. There's no problem.
Well, it goes along.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's fine. It goes a long way. Just these shout outs that you're giving to the parents about the students, you know, they're, it really increases their confidence level when you're sharing with the parents, you know, what they're doing in class. And I think I wanted to also talk a little bit about the digital poems that you've been assigning. You had been assigning those for several years prior to the pandemic. How have you experienced students' engagement has increased in writing these? If you compare those to the paper assignments, and you also told me in the pre-chat a little bit about the story with Yana.
Yana was the young lady who flew back and helped us out, but Gianna
is the mother.
Gianna wrote an amazing poem. And I always have the kids read as of our first story since we're in seventh grade. We read Gary Soto, who wrote Seventh Grade. And he writes about an experience that every male who has been a seventh grader at one time or another has experienced. There's a young lady whom you like, and you're trying to impress. And the harder you try, the more difficult it becomes to impress that young lady because your brain and your mouth disconnect. One goes in one direction, the other goes in another direction. And the story we're reading is about this young man who wants to impress the lovely Teresa. And Victor cannot find a way to impress the lovely Teresa. Every time he tries something, he purposely stalls in homeroom. He's sitting there with his down. There's nobody else in the room, but he wants to accidentally on purpose run into her so he can say something. And he sees that she finally finishes talking to the teacher and he tries to leave at the same time. And she says, hi, Victor. Now he could have said anything. Hi, Teresa. How was your summer? How are you doing? He says, yeah, that's me. And feels like, oh, geez, I blew that. He goes to French class and he wants to impress Teresa. And the teacher says, does anyone here speak French? And Victor raises his hand up. And so the teacher says, ah, parlez-vous français? And he doesn't know what to do. So the teacher says again, parlez-vous français? And he makes up something like, oh, oui, oui, GG, and September. Your nose, he has no clue.
Yeah.
He messes up in English class as well and embarrasses himself. But Teresa actually likes him and it ends up okay. And so he finds that, gee, maybe this is going to be a good year after all. And I would use that story as a lead in so we could write about what our first day was like.
Mm-hmm.
Did you drive in or did you come in on the bus? We don't have walk.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an option. Did you come into the seventh grade wing and already know where your classroom is? And are you familiar with it? Did you have classes in here last year or is it different? What did it sound like when you walked in?
Mm-hmm.
Who did you see that you hadn't seen from the year before? What did your homeroom look like when you went in? Well, this year we didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
We were hybrid, so only a certain number of kids came in. And the bus ride was different if you took a bus ride. You're in a mask now. You don't have a locker. You have to carry everything with you. It is a dramatic, dramatic difference. We have hand sanitizer in the room. We have paper towels in the room. And we have some of the students at home on a screen and some of the students sitting with us.
Yeah.
So that whole thing changed. And I said, we're going to do a different poem this year.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to talk about whether you were home or here on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
What it was like going through your first day of classes. What were some of the challenges if you were here or if you were home? And finally, put in there as well, what things do you miss? And then the last part of the poem, tell me, what are your plans going forth? What are you absolutely hoping to do when someone finally says to you, you know what? You can have your locker back.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You can all eat together at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You don't have to wear these masks. You know what? 6 feet distance. No, we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And one thing that middle schoolers will always do is hug.
Yeah.
You can't do any of that now. Adults can't do it. We can't even shake hands. And so we wrote some poetry and John and I wrote this unbelievable poem. And I said, I saw something come through and I took the poem and I wrote a blog about the whole experience of how
mm-hmm.
this assignment has changed and how the pandemic has changed my teaching style,
mm-hmm.
how I had to make some adjustments and adapt. And I sent the poem with the blog over to a link that took us to the US Department of Ed.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sent it over, I got a response saying, wow, this is really good. Could you take a picture with your student as well? Okay. So we posed the picture, both of us in masks. And I sent the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And the disappointing thing is they forwarded my blog, but they left out the poem and they left out the picture. And I thought, well, even if the picture went, which it may have, I don't know that for sure. Even if the picture went, the poem was the main reason I reached out in the first place.
Yeah.
But I was able to get the poem featured in a little bit different blog that I sent to the New Jersey Association for Middle Level Education in Jambly.
Okay.
And I had it put into Drew Teach, which is part of the National Writing Project. It's one of the New Jersey sites.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a little group and it went there as well. So Gianna did get some notice. We're having a meeting with the student teachers and the cooperating teachers and different people involved with Drew and the Drew education process. So those folks are going to get to hear a few lines out of Gianna's poem. I wanted her to record it, but she was just a little too shy. So I'm going to take a few of the lines and share it with the folks who are there, the administrators and my colleague teachers.
Yeah, and I think that's a great opportunity to be able to get the word out. And you're connected to so many of those organizations, both AMLE and locally in New Jersey, that, you know, being able to share student work and, you know, you're very active on social media as well. And I wanted to ask you what you're currently working on, writing-wise or speaking engagement-wise, especially with the Autism Think Tank. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I did a five-page poem. Mm-hmm. And I started it this summer, and I'm somebody who's one of these people who edits as it's coming out of the printer. Mm-hmm. And I edited, and then it just didn't feel right. And then I thought, I have this, and I shared it with a couple people, and I didn't get the reaction I was looking for, and I thought, mm-hmm. okay, I didn't hit it yet. So I went back and tried again and restructured it and thought, okay, I think I have it now. And then edited some more.
Yeah.
And basically the theme is how the pandemic has changed my teaching. Mm-hmm. And I talked about the way that the rooms are now and the limits that we have and the things that we had to adapt and can do and cannot do. And even some of the advantages where kids can get a little extra sleep in the morning. Mm-hmm. We're sure that they're not inhaling a breakfast, but maybe with that little extra time, sometimes we even see them at homeroom. We have to encourage them to put their cameras on because they're in the middle of having their breakfast.
Yeah.
And I tell them, okay, just show me the top of your head. That's enough. I'm good. But I'm responsible for your safety.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I have to know that that's you, that you're there. Yeah. I even wrote a note today. I sent an email home to one child saying, I didn't see you for 10 minutes. Please tell me what happened. Because I've got to be aware that you're there.
Yeah.
And nothing happened. If something happened, I've got to know. Mm-hmm. And I got a note back that, well, my computer was glitching. I said, that's okay. Mm-hmm. That happens. Send me some notice. As soon as things clear up, send me an email. Tell me I had a problem. I'm better now. Mm-hmm. You know, let a neighbor know. Somebody, we've got to know that you're okay. Mm-hmm. And those are, you know, some of those challenges. For the New Jersey Autism Think Tank, I have a program that I was originally going to run at the end of the month, but I had a conflict, so I had to push it back a week. And it's going to be running on February 3rd, I believe is the date that we have chosen. And I have two people who are going to speak about autism. One is a former... Well, she started out as an English teacher in a middle school and then went to a high school, now is an administrator. Mm-hmm. And she's an administrator in a school in New Jersey. Terrific young lady. Oh, brilliant, brilliant woman. She has a son who is autistic and he's an adult. Mm-hmm. So he's in a group home. He can get the best care there, but he still gets to visit. And during the pandemic, it's been a little tough.
Yeah.
So she's going to talk about, as a teacher, as an administrator, and as a mom of an autistic child, the kinds of things that teachers need to know about mm-hmm. autism, things that administrators need to know about autism, the things that adults, parents, and people in the communities need to know about autism. What are the things that you can gather together to make a difference in a positive way in your child's life? She said it helped her so much when she knew the kinds of things that needed to happen at that first child study team meeting when her child was young. Mm-hmm. And she took herself to that meeting and said, okay, I've done my research. These are the things I need to know. This is the type of advocate I need to be for my son. She said, my son wouldn't be as functional as he is today mm-hmm. if I hadn't known that, if I hadn't done that. And we also have a young lady who is a college student who has plans to go for her master's. She's part of our think tank. Mm-hmm. And she is just a delight to be around. She has autism, mm-hmm. but she's overcoming it. She's not using it as a crutch. She's using it as a spur. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Michelle, this young lady, inspires in me is to see how upbeat she is. She mm-hmm. does keynote speeches.
Wow.
Yeah. Mary Beth, our administrator on the panel, she is an incredible lady, loves poetry, which is, touches my heart. And she is an advocate to the point where she serves on the board of the Eden Autism Foundation. And she's involved every year in the annual event that they have, mm-hmm. which actually is a free event. They opened up the event this year to anyone who wants to come in. There are still ways to make donations and do things on behalf. But we had a conversation the other day about getting ready for this event. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I said to Mary Beth is, what I've been able to learn, and I knew nothing going into a lot of this other than the little bit that I get at child study team meetings. Mm-hmm. And I said, I found that my observation of people with autism is that they just have a different set of wheels going on inside their brain, mm-hmm. that they have a different way of framing something, a different way of focusing on something, and a different way of processing it. But the heart in those folks who are dealing with autism is the same as you find in the ones dealing with anyone on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Anyone with Down syndrome, anyone who is challenged.
Yeah.
They seem to rise to it. And for some unknown reason, the heart connects even more. And they're the ones giving the comfort. It's incredible to see someone who is getting help with academics comforting the person next to them who maybe didn't do well on a test or a quiz and has a tear in their eye. And this youngster is leaning over saying, "Don't worry, it'll be okay." Mm-hmm. And that's so mature. So we can't just write somebody off because of a label. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're different. Well, so am I, so are you, so are all of us. We're different. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that we're different. It would be a lousy challenge in the world if we weren't different. We'd have no challenge.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and I think it's great to hear about your involvement in this think tank and how you're able to spread the word about some of these students that you're working with, and you know, just seeing those you know, those inspirations that students on the spectrum are sharing and giving to us as educators and parents. We've had such a wide variety of things to talk about on the podcast today, but out of everything we discussed, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
I would like them to know that one of the biggest advocates you have as a parent, a child, a community member, a colleague, is a teacher. Mm-hmm. That teachers do indeed make a difference. For way too long, we have had this expression, those who that can do, those that can't teach. And I'm sorry, but not only is that a bit insulting, it also is not the original saying. Mm-hmm. There was a little known gentleman from some far off country. I think it was maybe Greece he was from. And I think his name was Aristotle. Mm-hmm. And this little known gentleman did not say what I had just said. Mm-hmm. He said something different. His words are, those that can do, those that understand, teach. And that's so true. Every one of us is a teacher in mm-hmm. some way or other. Every one of us has inspired someone in some way or other. Every one of us has given comfort to someone in some way or other. Mm-hmm. It's who we are. It's what we do as humans. And teaching is just something that some of us do for our profession. This mm-hmm. is what we do every day. But moms and dads teach their kids. And the greatest factor in determining a child's success is involvement by those folks at home, mm-hmm. encouragement by the folks at home. If you involve yourself in your child's education, if you support your child, if you tell your child, yes, it's nice to get A's, but you know what? You're not going to get A's all the time. Mm-hmm. What you are going to get is the opportunity to give your best effort. And if you're giving that, you're okay. Mm-hmm. You're going to be very successful in life. And if you don't take advantage of others, but you take advantage of the offers, the reasonable offers, the productive offers that people make to you, and you reach your hand out to help others, then you don't multiply the goodness mathematically, you multiply it geometrically. You create synergy. Mm-hmm. That's where it happens.
Wow, I think those are such great words to end with. You know, a lot to ponder from what you said there, you know, giving kids, you know, the best opportunities, and, you know, it doesn't matter if you fail, right? You can succeed in your own way. Well, where can people find you online, read some of your blogs, and connect with you?
Easiest way to connect with me is through Twitter. I'm at Prof, capital P-R-O-F, capital J, capital P-I-Z-Z-O, at Prof J. Pizzo.
Great. I'll put that in the show notes. Well, thanks so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast. It was really a pleasure to speak with you today.
Dana, I appreciate you doing this, not only with me, but with all the other folks whose time you are featuring, whose time you are allowing to share your expertise and your tremendous ability to listen. I think that's as good as anything. You encourage the best to come out of the folks who sit here on my end and tell our stories to you.
Well, thank you so much.